Chapter 3. The Gallows. I beseech you, I implore you, in the name of your anxious friends, in the name of your suffering families, in the name of your impending widows and orphans, stop ere it be too late. Disband these New England societies, renounce these soul-blistering saturnalia, cease from varnishing the rusty reputations of your long-vanished ancestors, the super-high moral old ironclads of Cape Cod, the pious buccaneers of Plymouth Rock, go home, and try to learn to behave. However, chaff and nonsense aside, I think I honor and appreciate your pilgrim stock as much as you do yourselves, perhaps. And I endorse and adopt a sentiment uttered by a grandfather of mine once, a man of sturdy opinions, of sincere make of mind, and not given to flattery. He said, "People may talk as they like about that pilgrim stock, but, after all said and done, it would be pretty hard to improve on those people. And, as for me, I don't mind coming out flat-footed, and saying there ain't any way to improve on them except having them born in Missouri." Compliments and Degrees, delivered at the Lotos Club, January 11, 1908, and introducing Mr. Clemens, Frank R. Lawrence, the president of the Lotos Club, recalled the fact that the first club dinner in the present clubhouse, some 14 years ago, was in honor of Mark Twain. "I wish to begin this time at the beginning, lest I forget it altogether. That is to say, I wish to thank you for this welcome that you are giving, and the welcome which you gave me 7 years ago, and which I forgot to thank you for at that time. I also wish to thank you for the welcome you gave me 14 years ago, which I also forgot to thank you for at the time. I hope you will continue this custom to give me a dinner every 7 years, before I join the hosts in the other world, I do not know which world. Mr. Lawrence and Mr. Porter have paid me many compliments. It is very difficult to take compliments. I do not care whether you deserve the compliments or not, it is just as difficult to take them. The other night I was at the Engineers Club, and enjoyed the sufferings of Mr. Carnegie. They were complimenting him there. There it was all compliments, and none of them deserved. They say that you cannot live by bread alone, but I can live on compliments. I do not make any pretense that I dislike compliments. The stronger the better, and I can manage to digest them. I think I have lost so much by not making a collection of compliments, to put them away and take them out again once in a while. When in England I said that I would start to collect compliments, and I began there, and I have brought some of them along. The first one of these lies, I wrote them down, and preserved them. I think they are mighty good and extremely just. It is one of Hamilton Mabie's compliments. He said that LaSalle was the first one to make a voyage of the Mississippi, but Mark Twain was the first to chart, light, and navigate it for the whole world. If that had been published at the time that I issued that book, Life on the Mississippi, it would have been money in my pocket. I tell you, it is a talent by itself to pay compliments gracefully and have them ring true. It's an art by itself. Here is another compliment by Albert Bigelow Paine, my biographer. He is writing 4 octavo volumes about me, and he has been at my elbow 2.5 years. I just suppose that he does not know me, but says he knows me. He says Mark Twain is not merely a great writer, a great philosopher, a great man. He is the supreme expression of the human being, with his strength and his weakness. What a talent for compression! It takes a genius in compression to compact as many facts as that. W.D. Howells spoke of me as first of Hartford, and ultimately of the solar system, not to say of the universe. You know how modest Howells is. If it can be proved that my fame reaches to Neptune and Saturn, that will satisfy even me. You know how modest and retiring Howells seems to be, but deep down he is as vain as I am. Mr. Howells had been granted a degree at Oxford, whose gown was red. He had been invited to an exercise at Columbia, and upon inquiry, had been told that it was usual to wear the black gown. Later he had found that three other men wore bright gowns, and he had lamented that he had been one of the black mass, and not a red torch. Edison wrote, "The average American loves his family. If he has any love left over for some other person, he generally selects Mark Twain." Now here's the compliment of a little Montana girl which came to me indirectly. She was in a room in which there was a large photograph of me. After gazing at it steadily for a time, she said, "We've got a John the Baptist like that." She also said, "Only ours has more trimmings." I suppose she meant the halo. Now here is a gold miner's compliment. It is 42 years old. It was my introduction to an audience to which I lectured in a log schoolhouse. There were no ladies there. I wasn't famous then. They didn't know me. Only the miners were there, with their breeches tucked into their boot tops, and with clay all over them. They wanted someone to introduce me, and they selected a miner, who protested, saying, "I don't know anything about this man. Anyhow, I only know two things about him. One is, he has never been in jail, and the other is, I don't know why. There's one thing I want to say about that English trip. I knew His Majesty the King of England long years ago, and I didn't meet him for the first time then. One thing that I regret, was that some newspapers said I talked with the Queen of England with my hat on. I don't do that with any woman. I did not put it on until she asked me to. Then she told me to put it on, and it's a command there. I thought I had carried my American democracy far enough. So I put it on. I have no use for a hat, and never did have." Who was it who said that the police of London knew me? Why, the police know me everywhere. There never was a day over there when a policeman did not salute me, and then put up his hand, and stop the traffic of the world. They treated me as though I were a duchess. The happiest experience I had in England was at a dinner given in the building of the Punch publication, a humorous paper which is appreciated by all Englishmen. It was the greatest privilege ever allowed a foreigner. I entered the dining room of the building, where those men get together who have been running the paper for over 50 years. We were about to begin dinner, when the toastmaster said, "Just a minute, there ought to be a little ceremony." Then there was that meditating silence for a while, and out of a closet there came a beautiful little girl dressed in pink, holding in her hand a copy of the previous week's paper, which had in it my cartoon. It broke me all up. I could not even say thank you. That was the prettiest incident of the dinner, the delight of all that wonderful table. When she was about to go, I said, "My child, you are not going to leave me. I have hardly got acquainted with you." She replied, "You know I've got to go. They never let me come in here before, and they never will again." That is one of the beautiful incidents that I cherish. At the conclusion of his speech, and while the diners were still cheering him, Colonel Porter brought forward the red and ash gray gown of the Oxford doctor, and Mr. Clemens was made to don it. The diners rose to their feet in their enthusiasm. With the mortar board on his head, and looking down admiringly at himself, Mr. Twain said, "I like that gown. I always did like red. The redder it is, the better I like it. I was born for a savage. Now, whoever saw any red like this? There is no red outside the arteries of an archangel that could compare with this. I know you all envy me. I am going to have luncheon shortly with ladies, just ladies. I will be the only lady of my sex present, and I shall put on this gown and make those ladies look dim." Books, authors, and hats, address at the Pilgrims Club luncheon, given in honor of Mr. Clemens at the Savoy Hotel, London, June 25, 1907. Mr. Burrell, M.P.P., Chief Secretary for Ireland, in introducing Mr. Clemens said, "We all love Mark Twain, and we are here to tell him so. One more point, all the world knows it, and that is why it is dangerous. To omit it, our guest is a distinguished citizen of the great republic beyond the seas. In America, his Huckleberry Finn and his Tom Sawyer are what Robinson Crusoe and Tom Brown's school days have been to us. They are racy of the soil. They are books to which it is impossible to place any period of termination. I will not speak of the classics, reminiscences of much evil in our early lives. We do not meet here today as critics with our appreciations and depreciations, our twopenny little prefaces or our forewords. I am not going to say what the world a thousand years hence will think of Mark Twain. Posterity will take care of itself, will read what it wants to read, will forget what it chooses to forget, and will pay no attention whatsoever to our critical mumblings and jumblings. Let us therefore be content to say to our friend and guest that we are here speaking for ourselves and for our children, to say what he has been to us. I remember in Liverpool, in 1867, first buying the copy, which I still preserve, of the celebrated Jumping Frog. It had a few words of preface which reminded me then that our guest in those days was called the wild humorist of the Pacific Slope, and a few lines later down, the moralist of the Maine. That was some 40 years ago. Here he is, still the humorist, still the moralist. His humor enlivens and enlightens his morality, and his morality is all the better for his humor. That is one of the reasons why we love him. I am not here to mention any book of his that is a subject of dispute in my family circle, which is the best, and which is the next best, but I must put in a word, lest I should not be true to myself, a terrible thing for his Joan of Arc, a book of chivalry, of nobility, and of manly sincerity for which I take this opportunity of thanking him. But you can all drink this toast, each one of you with his own intention. You can get into it what meaning you like. Mark Twain is a man whom English and Americans do well to honor. He is the true consolidator of nations. His delightful humor is of the kind which dissipates and destroys national prejudices. His truth and his honor, his love of truth, and his love of honor, overflow all boundaries. He has made the world better by his presence. We rejoice to see him here. Long may he live to reap the plentiful harvest of hearty, honest human affection. Pilgrims, I desire first to thank those undergraduates of Oxford. When a man has grown so old as I am, when he has reached the verge of 72 years, there is nothing that carries him back to the dreamland of his life, to his boyhood, like recognition of those young hearts up yonder. And so I thank them out of my heart. I desire to thank the pilgrims of New York also for their kind notice and message which they have cabled over here. Mr. Burl says he does not know how he got here. But he will be able to get away all right. He has not drunk anything since he came here. I am glad to know about those friends of his, Otway and Chatterton, fresh new names to me. I am glad of the disposition he has shown to rescue them from the evils of poverty, and if they are still in London, I hope to have a talk with them. For a while I thought he was going to tell us the effect which my book had upon his growing manhood. I thought he was going to tell us how much that effect amounted to, and whether it really made him what he now is, but with the discretion born of parliamentary experience he dodged that, and we do not know now whether he read the book or not. He did that very neatly. I could not do it any better myself. My books have had effects, and very good ones too, here and there, and some others not so good. There is no doubt about that. But I remember one monumental instance of it years and years ago. Professor Norton, of Harvard, was over here, and when he came back to Boston I went out with Howells to call on him. Norton was allied in some way by marriage with Darwin. Mr. Norton was very gentle in what he had to say, and almost delicate, and he said, Mr. Clemens, I have been spending some time with Mr. Darwin in England, and I should like to tell you something connected with that visit. You were the object of it, and I myself would have been very proud of it, but you may not be proud of it. At any rate, I am going to tell you what it was, and to leave to you to regard it as you please. Mr. Darwin took me up to his bedroom, and pointed out certain things there, pitcher plants, and so on, that he was measuring and watching from day to day, and he said, the chambermaid is permitted to do what she pleases in this room, but she must never touch those plants, and never touch those books on that table by that candle. With those books I read myself to sleep every night. Those were your own books. I said, there is no question to my mind as to whether I should regard that as a compliment or not. I do regard it as a very great compliment and a very high honor that that great mind, laboring for the whole human race, should rest itself on my books. I am proud that he should read himself to sleep with them. Now, I could not keep that to myself, I was so proud of it. As soon as I got home to Hartford, I called up my oldest friend and dearest enemy on occasion, the Rev. Joseph Twitchell, my pastor, and I told him about that, and, of course, he was full of interest and venom. Those people who get no compliments like that feel like that. He went off. He did not issue any applause of any kind, and I did not hear of that subject for some time. But when Mr. Darwin passed away from this life, and some time after Darwin's life and letters came out, the Rev. Mr. Twitchell procured an early copy of that work, and found something in it which he considered applied to me. He came over to my house. It was snowing, raining, sleeting, but that did not make any difference to Twitchell. He produced the book, and turned over and over, until he came to a certain place, when he said, colon here, look at this letter from Mr. Darwin to Sir Joseph Hooker. What Mr. Darwin said, I give you the idea, and not the very words, was this. I do not know whether I ought to have devoted my whole life to these drudgeries in natural history and the other sciences or not, for while I may have gained in one way, I have lost in another. Once I had a fine perception and appreciation of high literature, but in me that quality is atrophied. That was the reason, said Mr. Twitchell, he was reading your books. Mr. Burrell has touched lightly, very lightly, but in not an uncomplimentary way, on my position in this world as a moralist. I am glad to have that recognition too, because I have suffered since I have been in this town. In the first place, right away, when I came here, from a newsman going around with a great red, highly displayed placard in the place of an apron. He was selling newspapers, and there were two sentences on that placard which would have been all right if they had been punctuated. But they ran those two sentences together without a comma or anything, and that would naturally create a wrong impression, because it said, Mark Twain arrives Ascot Cup stolen. No doubt many a person was misled by those sentences joined together in that unkind way. I have no doubt my character has suffered from it. I suppose I ought to defend my character, but how can I defend it? I can say here and now, and anybody can see by my face, that I am sincere, that I speak the truth, that I have never seen that cup. I have not got the cup, I did not have a chance to get it. I have always had a good character in that way. I have hardly ever stolen anything, and if I did steal anything I had discretion enough to know about the value of it first. I do not steal things that are likely to get myself into trouble. I do not think any of us do that. I know we all take things that is to be expected, but really, I have never taken anything, certainly in England, that amounts to any great thing. I do confess that, when I was here 7 years ago I stole a hat, but that did not amount to anything. It was not a good hat, and was only a clergyman's hat, anyway. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.